Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Listen to an interview on top of a mountain talking about how to regenerate a whole watershed, how to see value again in a forest, a super overgrown forest, that is, and how to connect a multi-billion dollar tourism industry with the source of its water. Join me in this wide-ranging interview from Spain, where we talk about water, the meaning of life, burnouts, farming, eggs, cows, and a lot more. This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the planet mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below.
Welcome to another episode. Today we're in a very, very special place, the home of Stefan Dongen, our guest. Thank you so much for hosting us here. You're gonna hear a bit of background noise. There's a small airplane flying over and a lot of birds that are singing their evening song as the day is slowly coming to an end. We're in a forest, not a very natural forest. We're gonna talk about that, but in a beautiful place, a few hours north of Barcelona in the direction, like the pre-Pyrenees, or the pre-mountains. It's definitely hilly. And we're gonna talk about what brought Steph here and what are his plans, and also what already has been done, which is quite a lot. So thank you so much for having us here, and welcome to the podcast.
Great to have you, Koen.
Finally, Steph has been pulling us for many years.
For 3 years, or 4 years.
I mean, considering COVID and some family things, we were busy, and we're waiting for the right moment to pass by, which is definitely now. And to start with, I mean, you're obviously not Spanish, so let's start with a short introduction to how did you end up on a mountain a few hours north of Barcelona, basically trying to regenerate a watershed.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's great to have you and your beautiful family here. In the end, I ended up here walking from the San Sebastian, it's basically the west coast of the Pyrenees. I walked to the east coast to find a place. But before that, why I actually started walking was my insight during my time with Enview. I worked there for 20 years, basically in all over the place, all over the world. I say too much again.
Don't worry about it. Okay. It's a conversation.
Sorry, where was I?
20 years of Enview, working everywhere.
My 20 years of Enview. During my 20 years of Enview, I had a big insight that the cause of the mass immigration to the big cities, where we were working a lot in the slums to find business solutions for the social and environmental problems there, that most of the people went there because of their degraded soils. They were not productive anymore. They could not live there anymore. And so I did some research. And during that research, I met Willem Verwerda, who was just starting Common Land. During our conversations, we built a relationship and trust. And actually, he invited me to be part of the management team, the startup of Common Land in that phase, those first 2 years. And I was so inspired and also shocked, basically, that already 30% of the world soil is severely degraded, and we are like on our way to degrade a lot more. And the role of forests in the production of water, a lot of insight that inspired me, and I thought that made me decide, okay, all what I do at Envue, building this business, to activist businesses, to create change in the world, actually do not matter anymore if there is no healthy soil, no healthy forest that produce water. Water is life. So that's the short version. I started looking for land when I was 35. So I looked for land for 12 years in the Nordics, throughout Europe basically, and decided in the end it will be Spain. And then I made a journey, a pilgrimage to actually feel where I wanted to live.
And you almost made it to the other coast, basically. If you start from Bilbao, we can see almost
yes,
the sea.
Yes, exactly. So. Yeah, it's a 900 kilometers trip.
So what made you choose, or made you connect to this place differently than other places you pass through? Because many are rural, many are degraded, abandoned.
Yeah. One is the energy. Mm-hmm. It feels very good here for me. The silence, the darkness, the remoteness. It truly feels like wilderness. Of course, it's not, because you're really connected. You're very close by Girona and Barcelona, and this is a place with a forest area with a history. And so that's my personal reason. And besides that, I always wanted to be a forest guard. That's my childhood dream.
Now so, you have a few hectares.
Yeah. Yes. but the more professional reason is this area is basically 95,000 hectares abandoned forest. It's a valley with a watershed, with the source of the Muga River, till it reaches the sea. There are a lot of socio, economic, ecological issues in this valley, and due to the its abandonedness, I say it like that, yeah. And my wish to actually create a demonstration case in Europe for the transition of an abandoned valley like this with all these issues to actually hopefully a flourishing real regenerative economy that is thriving of life. And it ticks all the boxes.
And the challenges, yeah. And I think the second, you said my first big insight, and there's a second one which is fundamental here, because it's not that you bought these hectares, of course you didn't buy all of them, and you're in the process of buying more and basically creating alliances with other landowners, etc., and creating this case of a forest that is not very natural and has a lot of opportunities, but you don't base it fully on, let's say, the agriculture or forest case. You had a second big insight of what a place like this could be for others as well to come here. Yeah. and quote-unquote hospitality, which is a weird word in this case, and we'll let you explain better what you're doing here, and you create the home.
Yeah.
and not just living of forest products and farming products, which is definitely an important part.
Yeah.
But there's another driver that you didn't want to be alone on this mountain, let's say. You wanted other people to come, and specific people to come as well.
Yeah, yeah, so the other big insight during my time at Envue is that a lot of my peers, fellow change makers, had the tendency to lose themselves in their passion and to slowly burn out. And
which is a risk for the change making sector. Like if we lose people after 5, 10, 8 years for a couple of years when you burn out, that's not something we can afford.
No, so I saw that, and so people cannot be their most beautiful self or like they live their full potential. I wondered why I did not burn out those 20 years. In those 20 years, and my insight was like I spent every year 1 or 2 months in silence in nature, and
so even in the busiest periods of NVU in those 20 years, you consistently every 12 months at least.
Yeah. So it was a regeneration of myself basically, and it really worked well, and so. I wanted to create a safe space for change makers, basically to regenerate, rejuvenate themselves, to connect to nature themselves and their inspiring peers. So I created the home for the pioneers of our time. We can host here from 8 till 60 people. We have water from the mountain. We are very remote in the middle of the forest. You drove up with your Tesla and I really
rented for anybody writing. Rented a Tesla. But it's the road is, I've seen worse. But it's remote. It's a good 20-25 minutes up if you're not in a Jeep. And the interesting thing is, what I really noticed, because we've been in quite a few remote places, remote farms, is that you don't see any other like ruins or farmhouses. Like, your neighbor is all the way down the mountain, basically, pretty much. And that remoteness, of course, really helps with reconnecting. Like, you can walk for, I wouldn't say days, probably pretty much without seeing another house. Like, in the nights here, you don't see other lights.
No.
Except all the way down the valley, which is really far.
Yeah.
And that's really unique. Like, I haven't seen that in any other places.
No.
And with all the comfort and luxury you need, it's a very interesting combination.
Yeah.
And do you see that, like, people come here and, like, what's the typical, how do you say, typical week looks like for people? Like, they come here and are they really high energized? Like a group of change makers come here. Let's say risk of burnout. What do you do with them, or what do you offer them, or what do you don't do with them? Let's say.
Yeah, exactly. It's more that.
Go and walk and sit.
Yeah. So the concept is, you come at my home, and so it's not a hotel. That atmosphere is not there. It's like, you come at my home, and I have tried to make you feel at home. So everything is thought through. Okay, so what if you come to somebody's home? What do you want? No. So that's one. I think that feeling of welcome, being welcome and coming home, homecoming. It's really interesting. Like, we had groups from the UNFCCC. Like, we have mayors from different cities, and they come in their suits and their shiny shoes,
which is not a fit here. Let's say cultural fit. It's not a suit place.
And they come with their laptops. A lot of people, or entrepreneurs, like. Even like, and within, well, actually, if people arrive, we let them walk down. So already the silence grabs them.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them, okay, what am I doing here in my suit? and so within like an hour, people are like making the first step of becoming themselves again.
Yeah, and it's not like you force, like, you designed it that way, because there's great internet, you can do amazing co-working, but somehow, of course, the outside and the inside design triggers you to not really want to be on your laptop, basically.
No, the silence, does it work? The forest, does it work? And the vultures do their work. Like, we have a restaurant for the vultures here up at the mountain. It's super impressive if you see those 3 meter big.
It's really bad. Like, every morning you see them, like, with the right term of energy, taking their flight and seeing circling up, and then going down the valley. It's they're big.
So basically, the theme here is like well-being, taking care of yourself, rest well, eat well. We have all the food here from the valley, ecological, healthy, very tasty and nicely presented. And also take, like, we call it co-working, in the sense of, like, people can help each other, but it's like creating me time.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that actually are really important for you to do, but you actually don't prioritize, because they're like your personal things, no?
Mm-hmm.
Like writing your journal, or writing a poem, or like reflecting on your life, where do you want to go for your next steps, those kind of things. And we really create space for that here. So this working actually on your, doing your inner work, that's basically what we facilitate by basically creating space and taking care of you.
And then that, again, quote unquote, hospitality side obviously creates a nice revenue stream when done well, which is absolutely not easy, but creates a revenue stream which makes you not completely dependent on the agriculture and forestry part, which is nice.
Yeah.
And of course brings a lot of people here, which is great. And then on the forestry side or on the land side, let's say, because this is a forest, you said, with a history. Mm-hmm. It's not a natural forest, whatever that might mean. Like, what's the history of the place here? Why is there actually, was there a ruin or was there a farmhouse that you could rebuild into a home? Yeah. Like, it wasn't abandoned. You didn't start from scratch because you can't in Spain. You needed some structures. Why was there a structure on that mountain?
Yeah, so first I'll explain a bit about the history here, and then I will go into more the approach I took to actually develop the project. This side of the Pyrenees was basically a charcoal production place. And so the farms that you see, the farm you see here was historically one of the main farms managing these forests for charcoal production, which actually was the input for the energy production in the Mediterranean here area. So what you see here, basically oak forest, beech forest. Now you see a lot of pine, but they were not here 100 years ago. And so the trees were cut every 7 years. So this is a specific type of oak. It's called a stone oak, and it sprouts like multiple trunks on one root system. So they could harvest every 7 years a new batch. And that's what they did for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Early 1900s, oil and gas took over.
And so it collapsed.
Within a couple of years, the whole thing collapsed and people moved away and the farms became ruins and the forests like exploded, because if you keep it small for hundreds of years on the big, big root system, like you see, like, yeah, it's like a 10x volume of forest or more. With invasive species like these pine trees that are everywhere. Pushing out wildlife.
Basically closing the canopy, no light hitting the ground.
Exactly.
Starting to become a risk for fires lower down the valley. Yeah. Low life, low biodiversity. No vultures anymore.
Response function of the... Yeah, no vultures anymore. Response function of the soil degrades. A lot of water has been sucked up by these trees. A lot of water has been spread out by these trees, and so the climate is also changing, the microclimate. So that's a bit the situation here, and they talk about like...
It's funny because you look at it and you see, oh wow, so many trees. Of course, with a non-expert view, and then hearing now the story, which basically means it's very overgrown. And very degraded in terms of soil and biodiversity in terms of plants, etc. Yeah. So a lot of opportunity, but it had 100 years to explode, and now it's and no large mammals or no large animals to maintain, nor humans to cut or prune. So no keystone species. Yeah.
No. People like abandoned the valley. Like, there's no economy here. There are actually a lot of 60, 70 plus people living here. So keeping all the houses occupied for the young people. I have a lot of trouble like finding housing for my team.
Which we hear in a lot of cases, actually, like in these rural economies, real estate is an issue.
Yeah.
Like housing, apartments for young families or young people that don't want to live 10 years in a yurt is an issue.
So when I came here, like I first did not much for 2 years. I like actually really applied the concept of emergence, like to see what's the need of the land, what's the need of the house. Look at the people that come here, how did they flow over the land. No? But I quickly realized that, at least people here in Catalonia don't see value in the forest. So to create a business case, we have the traditional way of working. It's absolutely not possible, or like it's barely possible. Agriculture here was basically not present.
Zero.
Zero. And so I thought, okay, where can I start? And also creating cash, you know, like on a short term. And so I decided to start with the hospitality, because I could start right away after some small construction work. We're now 3 years on the road.
That's
it's not
an
small
understatement. If you see the before and after, yeah. Let's say in the history of the forest, it's a small glimpse.
Yes,
but yeah.
Yes. No, we did a lot of construction. And so by doing that, and also realizing, okay, in order actually to be able to start, I need to create housing possibilities for the teams that are coming here. We have now over 20 people, and yeah, they still live in Girona, Barcelona, Figueras. So, you know? So it's a big problem, but also cost-wise, paying for all the travel costs. So,
but you wouldn't have guessed that probably when you started here, that that would have been a bottleneck.
No. So with this vision, okay, creating this demonstration case for real regenerative economy, knowing that it's a huge project, I can never do it alone, I should always like involve other stakeholders. So where do I start, and what would be my role in this project? So I said, okay, the first thing is lead by example and start doing it. So hospitality and starting real estate development was one. And while doing that, with the profits from there, we created a farm. Just to see, actually, to revive the farm that was here. We put chicken, cows, we did, we tried essential oils, didn't work. Actually, the cows didn't work either. We had 50 cows here in the forest to see if they could open up the forest before we go into the forest and clean it. It was a really interesting experience. Like the cows like preferred the football fields in the local villages above the forest. So the first time
easier grass.
That's a lot of fun in the front page.
Yeah.
But after 10 times, people don't tend to like it. And we started to explore the forest products. And while doing that, I realized, okay, I need something more. An innovation lab or like a campus where we actually pull in universities, academics, innovators, entrepreneurs, funders to start doing this together.
Because nobody knows what to do with a 100-year overgrown forest.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Especially not like inaccessible like this on steep hills.
On steep hills, yeah.
And so that was that's actually already in development. It's an interesting project. Another thing that we did is like uniting the valley. And so we started the Muga Valley Partnership, and it's actually looking at the governance for the watershed and the forest. Well, you see on the one hand that there's a lot of forest actually producing the water, and then on the other hand of the watershed in the Costa Brava North, where millions of people every year go using the water, and they literally say, sit back to back, don't look at each other, actually don't talk to each other. We have here governance systems like with 26 villages that never work together.
And they're all connected by the same river and the same watershed.
Yeah.
And yeah, you look at a multi-billion euro tourism industry down the valley that desperately needs water, and every summer now is in shortage of, can we still fill the swimming pools and the showers, and the hotels are running dry, etc., without ever looking at their watershed.
Where does the water come from? Nobody asks it themselves.
Not from the sea, I can tell you. It's not the type of water you want to shower with.
No. So the urgency and the need to actually unite the stakeholders, the key stakeholders in the valley, the political field, the private sector, the people with passion, is really a necessary and interesting thing to do.
Do you enjoy that?
Yes, I love it. I really love it to find the common interest of the people. And actually, after a year, we found it. So it's easy, actually. It's, of course, the water is the fire. Nobody wants fire.
Fire risk.
And the sense of belonging, creating community between the villages, because people like to create relationship and trust and do things together. And so those three things basically are the nucleus of the Muga Valley Partnership, the three topics that we work and collaborate on. Yeah.
And in that, the sense of belonging, the water side, and is the food part or the farm part also part of that, or is you say, okay, let's start with the forest because it covers so much land and it dictates so much here? Or how do you see the farming side of things developing or after your experiment with the cows?
Yeah. No, so I actually started more thinking, okay, what do we have with the forest? I started, for instance, we started market gardens. We call it market gardens.
Because you need quite a bit of food, of course, in the hospitality part. Plus, there are, like you said, millions of people staying here that for sure absorb a lot of food.
Yes, so we started with that. And what you see is the wildlife is a big thing.
They eat everything. Yeah.
They eat everything the first 2 years, forget it. We tried several things. And now you start to see, okay, what can coexist, what can co-grow, basically, with the wildlife, the wild boar, the deer, etc. And so we found like different types of herbs, different types of wild plants that actually like wild asparagus, you know, like things that grow here naturally and are not eaten by the wild animals.
So much more on the foraging side and the collecting in the forest, which of course, for the people that visit here, is an amazing experience as well.
Yeah. Like
to connect back to nature, if you need to
collect
wild asparagus in the right season, it's an interesting experience. Plus all the wild herbs and all the smells, etc.
Yeah. So that's one thing that we are actually looking into. Like we have been piloting for now 2 years, and actually now are making a plan for the coming 5 to 10 years. Together with a consultant specialized in regenerative agriculture, but also in the back of our mind to make actually the investment plan for it. So one part is that food production, and the other part is what can we do with the forest? The forest needs animals to clean the understory to prevent fire. We tried cows, didn't work out. We will now try goats as the first animal that will actually do the big job, and then see if after the goat we can introduce the sheep. Mm-hmm. And so we're making the plan for that, the business case, and it looks good. So that's another part that we're looking into. Producing our own food, because we need to actually provide extra food in the winter time. And so cereals is one of the things that we look at in the fields. We have now 15 hectares of fields. We'd like to expand that to 30, perhaps 60 hectares.
So which is in the lower part of the valley, which is not overgrown by the forest.
No.
So it's accessible at least with machinery, etc.
And
the water part, coming back to like, have you seen the first, I mean, you united the valley, let's say, but the first connections through the water with the Costa Brava Nord, like the people, let's say, by the sea? Is that a next step? Or when do you see, like, have they been up here? Has there been any connection yet? Or is it more, okay, we first have to unite this valley before we start talking to the people down the mountain?
No, we already talking. Actually, first people that came up were the politicians, funny enough. So we have the Minister of Climate Action and Agriculture here.
Which is the same?
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
That says something.
Yeah. And biodiversity and forest CS4 things.
Wow.
Yeah. We had, like, see, 2 weeks ago I was there with the whole, their director generals and the secretary of state, whatever. I don't know all the...
But it's interesting in a progressive region like we are, first of all, that those four themes, and it's a she, that helps.
There were three she's. Yeah,
that's amazing.
And two males,
What was their reaction is not the right word, but when they arrived here, like what was the biggest surprise for you?
For me, the biggest surprise for me was that they really see the urgency.
Okay.
They really like, it's an alarm phase. And I did not expect that at all.
Okay.
It was a beautiful thing, welcoming thing, because then they're receptive for the message. You always have to wait, like it's politics, so like, but they publicly state that, and they're really open to collaboration. So it's not only words, it's not only talk, it's also actually also the walk. we created basically on not on their initiative, but the collaboration that came out of this a research group, a research coalition, is going to do a baseline study on the valley, on the quality of soil, but also the water situation, and also how the water is being used, because there's a lot of leakage of water, spilling of water, basically. One of the persons in that meeting said, like, if on Thursday it's farmers market, and there was a camping owner, and he said, I have more water in the summer if there's market than in winter, because they just let it go.
Flow. So the irrigation is just on because they're at the market.
Yeah. So there's more water in the river in summer than in winter on Thursdays. So it was like, that was for me a very strong image.
Okay, yeah. It's not seen as a precious resource yet.
No.
Although I think the last few summers, and this, we're in a very dry period now. We're recording this in March 2023.
Yeah.
That it hasn't rained for forever, hasn't snowed enough or at all. No. So this summer is going to be scary. Yeah. So it's alarm phase. Yeah. It's red. We're deep in red.
Yeah, the lake is at 30% in winter. So this is mostly after summer.
Yeah, and that means fire risk way up a mountain that hasn't seen that for a long time.
Yeah.
And so there's the baseline, and then what's your long-term strategy with the land? I mean, nobody sees value here, so you've been able to buy quite a bit and are in process of maybe buying more. Like you said, we might go to 30 or 60 hectares in terms of arable or fields that we can use, and that comes with a lot more forest. Are you planning to buy the whole valley and then be the big landowner? Like, what's your vision in terms of the ownership of all this land and all the potential? Because as we hope, there will be a flourishing regenerative economy based in this valley.
So the strategy from the beginning has been, it's 100,000 hectares valley. If we create a laboratory, actually zone an area of 5,000 to 9,000 hectares, where we can actually do experiments, pilots, research, whatever is necessary actually to fuel this regenerative economy. And that would be like a sizable area that's actually interesting for universities to come in, for politicians to actually declare this area as a sort of innovation zone. And so we look at the farm ideally between 5,000-9,000 hectares. And my vision for that is like to break also the cycle of access to land for young farmers, for farmers in general, I think. So what we try to develop, what the intention is to develop, is like a sort of an app store. We see the land as a platform where our developers, farmers, could be psychologists, it could be tourism operators, it could be anything.
Foresters.
Yes, of course. That operate on the land and develop their application. And by doing this, we make it much easier for people to get access to land and develop it, and to use actually the multifunctional aspect of the land, because you came from the root system to like the air, to medicinal value of the forests. So we look at it as the forests in a multidimensional way, and also multidimensional use, and that is actually what we offer that's what we want to offer in this platform. And for me, I don't have children, I have a foundation, so my goal will be, okay, how can we bring back the land back in the commons, the hand of the commons?
Yeah, because the app store analogy here requires that you don't have to pay an enormous rent on the land, or lease on the land, and that it won't be sold to whoever, because suddenly we're going to be in a biochar boom and the forest has a value again, and everybody that was doing nice forest work or whatever will be kicked off. So the commons and the land ownership discussion, of course, is the elephant in the room.
Yeah. And so there is like
governance access.
It's governance access. It's also financial models that actually provide a horizon of, like, I would like say 7 generations to actually be able to keep on maintaining and regenerating the land. And that doesn't exist at the moment. Yeah. And so
that's why it's 100 years overgrown. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's why my strategy is, okay, I first buy it, unite it, and create this campus, this innovation lab, to actually, a big part of that will be on that topic. Like, what's the future of finance, future forest, and the financial model behind it? How can we keep it or help it actually? It's because the forest still do its own thing. But how can we help it to come back in balance again and for 7 generations? Yeah.
So you use your wealth and investment money to buy and then transition it to the commons, yeah, in due course.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the 90,000 hectares that, it's like you mentioned, 100,000, yeah, and this will be 5 to 9. What is your vision for?
What we are doing with the Muga Valley Partnership is basically looking at what governance model could be uniting the different governance model that are there already, but are not governing the watershed. And so, how can we make the watershed the principal? How say that?
Driver
of this governance system and the forest ecosystem.
So the quality of the water, the quantity,
the water, the forest. What will be the foundations of this new economy? And I think the regeneration of the forest and actually all the works that have to be done to actually secure the future water supplies, there's so much work.
And, and I'm looking down the valley, the Costa Brava Nord would be nice if they somehow pay for that.
Exactly.
If there is a connection between who uses and who produces.
Yeah.
And
it's entire year for economy.
Yeah. There you have a stream. And it's, I mean, it's nice that we talk about water and not necessarily about carbon, which could be a potential driver for short-term cash or cash in general. Mm-hmm. But water is very, I mean, it's tangible and intangible at the same time, but it sort of flows down. It ends somewhere in a sea or a large water body at mm-hmm. some point, and you can follow it and track it and actually measure. Like, you can, and we have a deep connection with water and watershed, and not necessarily with the carbon cycle,
no, which is
actually not at all. Like, everybody who calls carbon sexy is probably wrong or delusional. So there's an interesting, it's an interesting model with, of course, a region down there that really needs water,
mm-hmm.
and a reliable source, a clean source, because there are literally billions on the line, because mm-hmm. tourists won't show up anymore if their swimming pool is empty, and there's a whole valley that can provide that, and or at least that's what we hope in a different model.
It's already scientifically proven. That's research we have.
We
can actually, this projected over the coming 25 years, we will lose 30% of the water volume, the current water volume, and like 2/3 of that is directly related to being non-active in the forest.
Wow.
So,
two-third.
Yeah.
Imagine, if you get active, plus what kind of restorative research comes out in the next decades on what triggers water, what triggers rain, what triggers this big seed, which is called the Mediterranean, to bring in more clouds or bring in more humidity and make sure it falls here and before it reaches the Pyrenees.
And this is exactly what you say, like, this valley, it could be in itself then the demonstration valley for Europe, because there are thousands of valleys like this with probably similar problems. Like,
there's thousands of watersheds that are not maintained or not thriving, let's say, or they're an underperforming ecosystem.
Yeah.
And they could do so much more.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think it's a global trend, like in all the rural areas, no, being abandoned at the moment. Well, actually, the biggest challenge for humanity lies in the rural areas. How do you regenerate those soils and forests? And
I can say, friend of the show, Abby Rose, calls the farmers and land stewards, and I'm for sure butchering the quote, but the key decision makers of our time, and we don't give them that power. Like if they decide left or right, it determines everything else. Mm-hmm. And somehow we haven't come around that yet in the cities and in the hotels. So what do you see when we look at this landscape? We're in this landscape now. We're sitting on two beautiful stones. There's a dog sleeping down there, and we're surrounded by birds, as you can hear. What do you see when you see this? Do you see an overgrown pine forest, and you think, okay, we need to get to work? Or what does this land now, after being here a couple of years, what effect does it have on you?
It's a great inspirator and teacher. I must say, never lived fully in nature for 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm. You always did a month or two.
Yeah. And it's like amazing if you see like a sort of every day something is happening, and there's a rhythm. Every year around the 14th of September, you know, the roaming of the deer starts exactly 2 weeks, you know, or like the swallow flying over at 19th of August at 7 o'clock in the night come to eat, and you can put your watch on it, and it's like those kind of things. You get a sort of becomes family. Mm-hmm. The land becomes your family, or I become their family. I became their part of their being part of it. It's really special. Energetic. So I don't see, I see the forest is suffering. It's asking, you know, either to burn or to be helped in back bringing, brought being back in balance. That's what you see, especially in summers. You know. But it gives so much energy and inspiration. I do my silent walk in the morning at 7, and you see me running around like, but I have so much energy here.
Yeah, but you also had that before. Let's be fair. Yeah, it wasn't that you were laying on the couch a lot in the 20 years of MVU.
Yeah.
And when the people come here, and especially you've had retreats here, and of course a lot of impact investors and people working in the big banks, etc. What do you see, like after a week they spend here and they connect, what do you see as the biggest transformation with people with wealth or in control of money? Mm-hmm. What have you seen, and that this valley affects them, or the home affects them?
I see that a lot of people recognize their need to be in connection with nature, and they come back sometimes 4 times a year.
Yeah. Repeatable customer, very good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good. Business case. You don't have to explain anything anymore. Like they come, they know where the fridge is, they know things work, they know the Wi-Fi code. Yeah.
But the recognition of, okay, mm-hmm. this is a fundamental need that I have as a human being, I think it's the first one. And people get really silent, so there's space to reflect. And we talk a lot about nature as a teacher, but also the values and how you reflect on life and you know, the purpose that you work on. And those things, I think a lot of people don't take time for. And that has a lot of impact, because here you can come for a week or 2 weeks, or sometimes people come for a month. And see, actually, like you said, like change people, it's like changing jobs or taking important decisions in their life. So they use this time here to actually reflect and prepare those decisions and things. Sometimes not knowing that, well coming, but well,
it's fine. Yeah. It doesn't need to be in the brochure.
No.
Be ready for important life decisions. Or maybe probably it shouldn't be in the brochure.
No.
It happens. Who cares, as long as it happens.
Yeah. So, and I actually I promote also, like, okay, this is important to align basically what you believe in and what your values are with how you invest, or like not even your invest, like how you spend your life energy.
But also your investments.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise you get this huge disconnect that we've both seen in Tonic with people that with amazing life values and then investments portfolio full of fossil fuels and sugar companies and Coca-Colas of this world. How do you sleep at night? Like, how does that reflect? Because that's you can drive your Tesla, separate your waste, have amazing solar energy, but if a lot of your wealth is doing horrible things, it's or in your job you're putting money to work. While we're talking, it actually starts to drip a bit.
Yeah.
And very little, not enough at all, but still good. Like, how do you reconcile that or connect that? And what would be your main message for? Because many people listening, unfortunately, cannot pass by here because of calendar distance, etc. What would be your main message from the home to them, especially people in, like, in entrepreneurship, in the manage resources, either their own because they're really good at building companies, or money which could fuel other people to build. What would be your main message from the mountain?
Main message from the mountain is to if you cannot come here, find that spot somewhere else near, close by, where you can be in silence, connect with the nature, and also feel that that it's not separated from you. It we are nature. Like, this is also a big insight that I have here, that I had here. Like,
you remember when that happened? Like, was that a gradual process? Because it's sort of, I feel that's the big switch.
Yeah.
You remember when that insight
came? Actually, this happened. The realization of it happened during my walk. Those 900 kilometers. I was, 2 months by myself with the animals around me, with nature, and like realizing that this soil is basically a composition of us all. I will go there too. You will go there, like, one day. Our ancestors are lying here. The animals that are walking around, they, before us, they make this soil. They're like giving us their nutrition, so their nutrients. And so everything comes from there. The trees, it's a being, it sweats, you know, it drinks water. It's like, it's a slow river, basically.
It pumps the water up, which defines physics.
So, and for me, that's.
You said the realization came on the walk.
Yeah.
And did it? That saying it like that sort of suggests it landed when you were really here. Is that fair?
Yeah. Actually, I always had the feeling when I was a young boy already, I really felt in resonance with nature. And then life took me, and so you lose a bit. You feel that you're out of resonance, no, you don't feel really that you're out of resonance, but if you're in nature, you feel really in resonance. Mm-hmm. And that realization came really strongly here, after being here for so long. I go as less as possible from down the mountain without becoming a hermit. But
now you have people coming up the mountain. You have the luxury or the great pleasure of hosting people here, which makes sure you don't become a hermit. Yeah. And what would you do differently? Actually, you've been here now 4 years. 5 years into it, I think. Looking back at those years, any big lessons learned, or the main thing you would do different, or actually would say, actually spending the 2 years on looking at emergence and looking and seeing what's happening and setting up the partnership, and
I'm 7 years ahead of planning. So when I make my first planning.
That's a first on the podcast. Somebody says I'm ahead of planning with these kind of extreme ambitious projects. Yeah. So it's faster than you thought.
Much faster than I thought. The farm, not really. The farm, I learned a lot, and I'm still learning. And I think
you wouldn't have taken the 50 cows, maybe.
Yeah, no, because I had to learn that.
Yeah, that's true.
I had to take.
You could learn with 20. Yeah, no, but yeah, there's. You planted a lot of trees that didn't make it, but yeah, it's also. Lessons, payments for lessons.
Yeah.
So nothing big. If you would start somewhere like the next valley, let's say, you would do differently?
Of course I will take learnings from here that I think I don't know if it was possible, but like I would try to find the right mentors around me. I started with a lot of local people, of course, and that's good because, like, they know the valley, they know the forest, they know they have the connections here. But I think I could have taken in more international benchmarking to go even faster. Yeah. Well, faster. I don't have to go fast, but I mean, then I
you
think
you do. You see the forest suffering. We see summers that are, lakes on 30%. Like that's probably also 7 years before. Like ahead of schedule.
Yeah,
and ahead of scary schedule. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a question we like to ask, inspired by John Kemp and his great podcast on where do you think differently than others? Normally we ask it on, let's say, regenerative agriculture, but I think in this case on regeneration it's fair. Like when you are with the groups in the home, and where do you see where you really think differently with most people that visit here, like people that fellow change makers that spend a week or a month, etc., here? Where are you, apart from the fact that you live on a mountain, but where do you think fundamentally different? Where are you contrarian, let's say?
Yeah, it's a good question. You asked me before, but
you thought he escaped it. No.
Yeah.
There must be something. Like, could be compost toilets are not that bad, or something much more deep or fundamental. Where do you like? What surprises you in that? Like, do you think, come on?
Yeah, I think the app store thing is well. The metaphor for the app store is different for people.
To see the land as a platform,
yeah.
Or the valley even. Like,
yeah.
That's where I am.
Yeah. I think the aspect of well-being and taking care of yourself is also very important, I think.
It's interesting that you started this not because you burned out.
Yeah.
Which is quite an interesting realization. I never burned out and everybody around me did.
Yeah.
So I should make sure that the next generation doesn't, or the next wave, but not because you had a severe burnout yourself, which is interesting.
I think also the long-term perspective that I take is different. I think in 20 to 40 years, and like actually the plan that we make for the forest is 1,000 years, because the Texas tree here can become 1,000 years. So like, you have to think about that. That's also a thing, long-term thinking. Then I think the financial aspect, also for me, money is a means. Of course, you should be really careful with it and do good management, but I take also from the money aspect, the long-term perspective, and also the return for me is much more than financial. It's like, if in 10 years we have the water level at 70%, that's a return, you know? And
you might figure out a way to get paid for that. Yeah.
But
the return, the important piece is the water.
It's an important, of course, I don't throw away the money.
Yeah.
But a part actually is a donation or like a subsidy or a grant, sorry. Actually get from generous people around me.
The dog is signaling that we are...
Snoring dog, yes, we are boring, sorry.
Yeah, we're boring. Sorry, dog.
Yeah.
I think that's a good... I mean, how... And that's a big question to answer. How do you put a value, and whatever that non-financial value is, on a thriving valley that produces endless amount of relevant, very relevant things that actually without that we can't survive.
Like,
I said somebody, actually somebody we both know, but I'm not going to quote, I'm not going to mention her, said something like, but a risky investment, or it was, let's say financially it was risky, deep in regeneration, and the advisor said, oh, this is a very risky advice, and from an advisor, financial point of view, and she said, yeah, but it's very risky not doing it.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And that's the time we're in. Like, it doesn't mean you should throw away your money, you put it on fire, and et cetera, but you should be very diligent with it. Of course, this is not financial advice, but we are in a time of quite desperate measures and quite...
And I'm lucky to find people that think along, aligned on that.
Yeah, they find, I mean, if you connect here, you walk in here and you fit, that's probably a good filter. If you make it up the mountain with whatever car you brought, or preferably a 4x4 Jeep, or let's say a higher, like it's just a higher ground, it's better. And let's see how we get down tomorrow. But that means something, the fact that you come here. It's not remote, but still remote. If you, like, there's nothing around, and that means you're searching for something, or looking for something at least. Yeah. And I can imagine many people find it here. So I want to thank you so much for the conversation, the hospitality, and for the work you do.
Hope to see you back soon. And all your listeners. All the links good.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.